Okay.
Question. What does it mean to bring Buddhism to the West, to bring Buddhism to Israel?
What does it mean to bring Buddhism to the West and to Israel? Okay, what I think bringing Buddhism to the West means is it's a process that's going to take a while, so it's not something that's done quickly all at once. And it's the process of learning the teachings so that we know what the Dharma is and we understand the Dharma well. And then bringing it into our own countries and our own cultures. And you have to know the Dharma well for a few reasons. First, because if you're going to share it with others, you got to know what you're talking about. Otherwise, it's misleading people on a spiritual path, and that's quite bad for everybody, you know. But also because a major thing that needs to be done in this process is discriminating what is Buddhism and what is culture. And in order to do that discrimination, you really need to know the Dharma well, and not just know it well in terms of words, but in terms of meaning, you know. Because what I've seen happen sometimes is, as Buddhism comes to the West, sometimes the teachings don't agree with their own personal beliefs and their own personal opinions. And so then they say, well, the Buddha didn't really teach that, or the Buddha didn't really mean that. So then you have people say, oh, well, the Buddha didn't teach rebirth. The Buddha very clearly taught rebirth, you know. So there may be things that maybe don't resonate with our personal worldview, but if we're going to bring Buddhism to the West, we have to bring what the actual teachings of the Buddha are. You know, we can't just kind of alter them to make them what we want. If we want, you know, to learn Buddhism and then use Buddhist principles and ideas in other fields, that's completely okay. And there, you don't need to necessarily bring everything. You know, for example, if somebody's a therapist, you know, then they bring in maybe the teachings on mindfulness, the teachings on patience, because they're doing therapy and using Buddhism to help them in their therapy. So they don't need to talk about rebirth and emptiness. A little bit of emptiness might help, but, you know, they don't need to use Buddhist terminology or bring the whole doctrine in, because what they're doing is just using Buddhism to inform, you know, their therapy. Or like in the States, there's Jon Kabat-Zinn is doing a lot of work with people who have chronic pain. And so bringing in mindfulness meditation and yoga and different things like that to help people in chronic pain. Or Geshe Kelsang Damdul from the Dialectic School, he's now doing some work in Ohio with people who have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So he's teaching them like breathing meditation and loving kindness meditation and a visualization meditation. But in the visualization, he's not saying visualize the Buddha and Shinrezi or whatever. You know, you can alter that meditation. I was telling the group that I met this morning who are doing prison work, you know, because the inmates may not all be Buddhist, probably none of them are. So, okay, visualize love and compassion and generosity as a ball of light. And, you know, and then that ball radiates light into you that purifies everything you don't like about yourself and all your guilt and your regret and you know, brings you all the good qualities you want to develop. So that kind of adaptation is very good when you're dealing with people who aren't Buddhist and you're dealing with other fields. You know, you're bringing Buddhist influence into psychotherapy or into education or into medicine. So that's fine, you know, because people aren't saying, I'm a Buddhist teacher and I'm teaching Buddhism. You're doing your career and you're using Buddhism to inform your career. But when you say, we're bringing Buddhism to the West, then you want to make sure that, you know, that there's a lineage and that you really understand the Dharma, and that if we change anything, we're just changing the cultural forms, we're not changing the meaning of the Dharma. So, you know, for that reason, it's important to know the Dharma well. Yeah, because, you know, with the Tibetans, it's the Dharma and culture are so mixed that if you say, what's what, you know, they don't know how to answer the question because in their life, Dharma and culture are completely mixed. And it's an interesting thing is, you know, that Tibet was never occupied, so they never had university education in Tibet. So like here, we, you know, have universities, so we study psychology, sociology, anthropology, history, you know, we have fields of knowledge that understand how groups of people work together, how cultures maintain themselves, how cultures assimilate. You know, we all study that, yeah. The Tibetans never studied it. There's no idea of, you know, Buddhism being something that exists within a culture, because for them the two things are just completely the same, you know, and there's no idea that, okay, Bang culture influenced what Buddhism looks like in Tibet, you know, because they don't have those fields of education, whereas we do, so, you know, we might look at some of these things a little bit differently, you know, like how you see history. Yeah, I mean, we try and get the facts. The facts, what we call facts. I mean, I was a history major in college. My take on history is that it's basically gossip from a male's point of view. Because it's all about wars and money. You know, if women wrote the history, it would, you know, they would talk about different things. But, okay, but that's aside. That's just my take on it. But, you know, for Tibetans, history is different. You use history to inspire people. So if you take a biography of a lama, you know, you don't get any feeling about what they were like as a human being. What you get is what teachings they studied, who they studied with, where they went to teach, and you get it's more a hagiography, kind of an embellished thing that inspires you. Whereas if we wrote a history, a biography of a teacher, you know, the way we would write a biography would be completely different than how the Tibetans would write a biography. Okay? So I'm just trying to point out like some cultural differences just so that we can be aware of these things. You know, because we want to bring the Dharma. We don't necessarily need to bring all of Tibetan culture, but we need to be able to discriminate what's Dharma and what's Tibetan culture. And then as you put Dharma into Israeli culture, you have to make sure that you use the good things of Israeli culture. Okay? You know, not the kind of things that are not so conducive to Dharma practice. Okay? So, you know, we want to really pick out the good things in our culture and put those together with the Dharma.
Like the
Nishalahim. Yes. Right. Yeah. But, you know, like everybody talking at once, mm-hmm. and everybody having their own opinion, that needs to be a little bit calmed down. Yeah. In terms of, you know, bringing Buddhism to the West. Yeah.
To Israel,
yeah. Okay, yeah.
My purpose, I'm talking about my family, in my name only, but I think I'm not the only one who wants to know. In this meeting was, as it happened, we celebrate the 10-year anniversary now. Mm-hmm. It may be just a coincidence, maybe not. But at this point, I feel that we want to stop and think about how to approach the future, how to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Should we continue the same way? Which was very nice.
Did to do
to continue the same way
being
done all this time, which is very nice.
Uh-huh.
Like teachers having courses, public talk, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time we used or we tried to, with the help of our teacher, to look ahead and bring ourselves up all the time to grow in the process. And now my question is, should we, in order to decide about how to continue, I feel that I need, I don't have enough knowledge, enough tools to know what the options are. Should we continue in order to decide, we have to think about it, and to know the possibilities, the options, the best ways to choose.
Right.
And that's why we thought it would be a very good idea to consult with teachers and, and hear opinions and have some more knowledge about the possibilities.
Okay.
What is our aim? Should we practice on our own, invite more teachers,
So which way to go in the future? So what do people feel, just speaking on a personal level now, what do you think would be helpful for your own personal practices? Let's just start there. You know, you've all been practicing for some period of time, so what do you think would be helpful for your personal practice?
I think focus. Some focus, because we're touching many different things, but we're not really, don't have a structured program maybe for 3 years where you know you do this, then that, then that, then you catch a little bit long ran, a little bit this, a little bit, and I think more depth by having some kind of a focus.
Okay, so more of a structured program where people would be committed for a period of time to go through it. And then you would go in more depth in the different topics. Yeah.
More practice.
More practice.
Not just the talk or teaching. Also not just with teachers, also with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So putting the teachings into practice and more formal meditation. And like you said, not just with the teachers, but as a group yourself, and then also probably personally too, regular daily meditation practice. Okay, what else?
I think if I may, the daily practice is somebody who just begins. I know that in order to do the daily practice, I gathered facts from here and from there, and it was never a structured way. Till now, I'm not sure if what I'm doing is not my own design of
Okay. Yeah. That maybe I'll just address right now. So a structured practice for somebody who's beginning. There, I would really I just put out a book called Guided Meditations on the Stages of the Path. And I think you already have the CD with the guided meditations. But the book talks very much also about how to set up your altar, how to use the CDs, just a lot of instruction for beginners that could be very helpful. It's, you know, in our particular tradition, it takes some time to set up a daily practice and some guidance, because we don't do only one meditation. We do different kinds of meditation, and then within the analytic meditation, we do many different analytic meditations on the different steps of the Lam Rim. So it takes some time to wrap your head around it, as we say. Yeah, but I think that's a good place to start with that book and the CD. Okay, so stuff for beginners, advanced, meditation.
As an absolute beginner, I feel the lack of a close personal teacher who is resident here to help.
Mm-hmm.
And the option is to have and a teacher who is very far. So looking for Gandhi Yatso visits and ask him, but I know his translator told me he's not getting new students anymore.
Who is this?
And if he says no, I don't know how to approach and how to ask for a personal teacher.
Okay, so having a personal teacher, and as part of that also having a resident teacher. Because a resident teacher, you know, would guide the whole group and would probably be the teacher of many of the people here. And then some of the people may also have other teachers that you've met beforehand.
And I feel the lack of this personality here in Israel.
Yeah. That's always, groups always get to that point where it's like you really want someone there who is there on a regular basis that you can refer to. Yeah.
Maybe the answer is the Dharma Center in Israel. Maybe we should just talk about it.
Yeah, inviting a resident teacher. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What else? Okay. So. You need self-discipline, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Anybody else here need self-discipline?
Yep.
All of us need self-discipline, don't we? Yeah, that's one thing that is very nice about having a group and about meeting together, is because when the group meets together, then you know your friends are waiting for you to come, and you're waiting for them to come. And so the practice gets done because you feel like, I need to show up because they're showing up, you know? And so practicing together as a group is very, very nice. There's different ways to do that, okay? One way to do that is to have city centers, you know? Like centers in the city, and then, you know, at least once a week, maybe twice a week, then meet together for meditation or meet together for a study group, something like that. So that's one way to do it, and that can be very good. And then you really have to make a personal commitment to go, whether other people go or not, because you know that it's good for you. Yeah. And then another thing to do, what some of our people in the States have done, is they have like a Dharma buddy. And so what they do is, you know, one person calls the other person at, you know, 6:30 in the morning, at, you know, because that's your meditation time, okay, or 5:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever it is, but you have your appointment with your friend, and one person calls the other. We have some people in Portland who do this, and they've been doing it for years. And they call each other, they just check in with each other, they do a few of the opening prayers of the meditation, they put the phone down, the phone's still on, so nobody else can call in and interrupt you. And you know your friend's on the other end of the line, and you meditate for a certain amount of time, and then you pick up the phone again, and then they might check in again and with each other, and then dedicate. Yeah?
You can Skype now.
Yeah, right, you can do it with Skype. Yeah? Yeah. But, you know, that's a really nice way if you just have a buddy, and you have a time that you meditate together every day or maybe twice a week or whatever it is. So that's helpful for the self-discipline. Another thing is you write in your calendar, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, I have an appointment with the Buddha. Okay? Are you going to show up the Buddha and not turn up for your appointment with the Buddha? You know, that's not so good to stand up the Buddha, you know? So if you have it in your calendar, then you keep your appointment with the Buddha, you're on your meditation cushion, and you keep to that. Okay? What other things do people think would help them? Yeah?
I have something which has nothing to do with the practice. It is more with the group.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think I'm not so sure how favorable this question will be. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that you have much experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know if some basic rules or basic things that we will write down for all the things that has to be done in the group, if there will be a sort of a list of things that should be done for each schedule of a retreat, for each Saturday meeting, for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And is something like this, when there's a basic list for things, does it help?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it make people stand against it, not guilty, not according to the list?
Okay.
What is your experience?
Okay.
Structure and unstructure.
My experience has been that structure is very helpful. In the Dharma groups that I've worked with and also at the Abbey, what we see is that over time, what it's helpful to do is for people to write down what they do. Like, if you organize a retreat, here's the checklist of what you have to organize. If you organize the kitchen in the retreat, here's the checklist of what you have to take care of. If you're doing the publicity for the retreat, here's what you have to do. If you're leading a meditation, here's a structure for how to lead a meditation. So, these kinds of things are quite helpful because you learn a lot by experience. You kind of make a lot of mistakes as you're doing things, and so you learn stuff. And then if you make these kinds of lists, at least it acts as a structure for somebody else who takes over the job next time, because whatever jobs each of you are doing now, you're not going to do forever. Somebody else will take over. And so at least they have a checklist of what you did. Of course, each new person who does the job, they're going to tweak it a little bit and change it to make it something they have to do it. You have to do a job in a way that you feel comfortable doing it. But the checklist at least gives you some structure to go on so you can learn from the experience of the people who did it before you. So that goes also just for leading meditations. If you have a checklist of how you do that. If you have a study group, a checklist, set your motivation, breathing meditations, introduce the topic, so long for discussion, then meditation, here's how you lead the meditation. So these kinds of things are helpful. Some of this stuff it might take me some time to write up, but some of it, because it's unique to doing things in this country, so the people who do different jobs, I think it's helpful if you write up those things, and then you have a binder, and you also have it all in a computer file, so different, you can send the whole folder, yeah.
So to bring a truck to move it out.
Yeah. Well, you need something streamlined. Yeah, to do that.
My question would be, how do you ask or make people to read those lists before they?
Oh yes, this is always the problem. Some people really want to learn from other people's mistakes. So they usually are looking for the lists among the truckload and they can't find it. So that's why it's good to streamline it so that they can find the lists. One thing that is we've found to be very helpful is when people change positions in the group, that it's not that, I resign on Friday and somebody else starts Saturday. And that's it. It's for a period of time we work together so that I can train the person who's going to take over from my position. And so that tends to work quite well, you know, because otherwise the new person comes in and they're very lost. So that's one way to do it. I also think it's helpful if you have a board that you stagger the board periods. So that, let's say if people are going to be on the board, they make a 2-year commitment. So half of the people change each year. It's not that the entire board changes every 2 years. Yeah, so you stagger things so there's some kind of continuity there. Yeah, and you can't make people read lists and do things, but you know, if you've done a position, then you know you have some experience, and just share your experience with the incoming person, and be aware that the incoming person is not going to do everything the way you did it, but you know, sharing your experience is useful, you know.
One of the first things we're going to change now, I think, and it is unanimously felt that this is what we want, is the way we're conducting discussion groups.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved the discussion group.
Yeah.
That's one thing everybody wanted to change.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've used that way of discussion group a long time, and it works really well. And people like that. And then also you choose topics that are related to people's lives. You don't make the discussion groups kind of, you know, how many defilements has a stream enterer, you know, abandoned? You know, it's like you make the discussions things that are relevant to your lives. And then everybody talks from their own experience. And when you talk from your own experience, you really get to know each other. And that brings so many benefits, because first of all, then you don't feel like you're the only one struggling, you know, because everybody has similar problems. And then in the discussion group, you learn how other people handled their problems in practice. You share how you handle your problems. And then also that process of being able to open up and talk about your how you are working with things in your own life, or, you know, how you're using the Dharma in your life, how you understand different things. It makes you really close on a personal level. And when you're close on a personal level, you care much more for each other. And then when you work together, you get along better. Okay? So I think this whole thing of being able to open up to each other is very important, because otherwise, you know, it's like, well, I just do my Dharma practice privately. My mind is a total mess, but I don't want any of you to know how messy my mind is, because I'm an older student and I should be setting a good example. So I, you know, try and look good and do everything right, and I boss everybody around, but inside my mind's a mess, you know? But I can't tell anybody. And so then everything inside of me becomes like a pressure cooker. Yeah? So that just doesn't work at all. I mean, we're all in the boat, the same boat. New students, old students, you know, we're all working with the same difficulties. Some people have more experience with something. Other people have more success with something else. But we're all in the same thing, helping each other. So we're not functioning together to try and impress each other with what marvelous and glorious Dharma students we are. That's not the purpose. Okay? You know, we work together to learn from each other and help each other. Mm-hmm. So I know sometimes that older students feel like, okay, I've got to set a good example for the younger ones. The kind of example that you set is of somebody who's trying hard. You don't have to set the example of somebody who's already a bodhisattva, because you're not. I mean, I hope you are, but, you know, I'm not. So, you know, so you set the example of somebody who tries hard, somebody who keeps a daily meditation practice, you know, somebody who, when they make mistakes, they can say, I made a mistake. Somebody who, when they're angry, can come back later and say, I spoke with anger, I'm sorry. You know, somebody who, you know, had a job to do for the community and forgot, and everybody's upset, and can come back to the group and said, I forgot. You know, so that there's some kind of transparency between us and some kind of trust, and what we're trusting in is each other's good motivation. And we're trusting in the fact that all of us are trying. You know, we're not all Buddhas, but we trust that everybody's doing their best. Mm-hmm. And so then, that just makes it so much easier to get along, because we're not trying to impress each other. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think setting your motivations at the beginning of meetings, like we just did, is very, very important. And take turns setting your motivation so that everybody, you know, we're all on the same page. We remind each other.